Mira a la izquierda, mira a la derecha. ¿Qué ves? ¿Dónde estás? In a world that seems to change daily, what will you do next? Welcome to the Next Steps Show with Peter Vasquez and co-host Aisha Kreutz, a starting point for discussion y un poco de dirección. Bienvenidos, soy yo, el conservative New Yorker, Peter Vasquez, and...
Aisha Kreutz.
The Extraordinary Machine.
The Extraordinary Machine.
Or did you change
the name? Mayor of Realville.
That's right. I keep forgetting. You're the mayor of Realville now.
Yeah, I am.
The Extraordinary Machine, mayor of Realville. Ladies and gentlemen, my co-host, Aisha Kreutz. Don't change it anytime soon because I can't keep up.
No, I'm not changing it. Extraordinary Machine is fine.
Buenos dias, Roberto. ¿Cómo estás?
I'm doing great, thanks. Except for I got to get my soldering iron out, I think.
Oh. To fix the technical
fix
issues?
Something.
Oh, that's funny. You know, us in the hood say we got to pull out the duct tape.
There you go.
Out in the woods.
They
got to pull out the soldering tools.
There you go.
Out in the woods. That's right. We're broadcasting live from the woods, ladies and gentlemen.
That would
be kidding.
Cool.
I'm kidding. Hey, you guys remember last couple of shows I brought up the quote, "Beware of false knowledge. It's more dangerous than ignorance."
Yes.
That is such a fun. I mean, I love that quote. It's such a truth. And you know what? Today's guest in the Next Step Show, he's a distinguished Army veteran. He's an advocate for freedom. He's a devout leader and a courageous American committed to upholding his oath to protect the United States against all threats, foreign and domestic. You know, I took that same oath a couple of times, and I can agree with that. It's not an oath you take for a second. It's an oath you take for life. We are honored to have the FBI whistleblower who has shed light on significant matters concerning Hillary Clinton. There goes that name again. The Clinton Foundation, the Uranium One sale deal to Russia, and election integrity. He's now a candidate for the House, for the U.S. House of Representatives for the West Virginia 2nd Congressional District. Ladies and gentlemen, join me in welcoming the Honorable Nate Kane. Welcome to my show, señor. Bienvenidos to the Next Step Show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Have you heard that quote that I mentioned before? Beware of false knowledge. It's more dangerous than ignorance.
I've not heard that, but I've heard similar ones to it. So that's a great quote.
It is a great quote, sir. And I think today you're going to help shed truth, light on truth, right, to help people really embrace quotes like this and understand why it's so important to be informed and be engaged and have the courage that we need to hold some of these jokers accountable. So, Nate, before we get into, you know, too much of your ordeal, can you tell us who you are? Who is Nate Kane? I want our listeners to know you personally. Where'd you come from? You know, what's your history? What brought you to where you are today?
Well, I grew up in Southern California, and so don't hold that against me. I grew up in a family that was conservative, even though I grew up in California. My father and my mother did separated and divorced when I was young, but even still, they had a decent relationship, and they raised me to have a respect for and an understanding of my duty. I remember my father taking me out when I was a young kid with him to the voting box, and you know, showing me and demonstrating to me my civic duty. My family history goes back all the way to the American Revolution, and I know that history about my family. Including my great grandfather, who was a POW in both World War I and World War II. So that understanding, that patriotism, that love of country, it's been instilled in me from a very young age. And in understanding and knowing the history, my founding father, my paternal ancestor that came here to America in the 1700s, who fought in the Revolutionary War, was at the Battle of Cowpens. And just knowing that history, it has had a profound impact on me. But the other thing that's probably been as much, if not more, of an impact on me is my relationship with Jesus Christ. I got saved at age 16, and I had a very profound experience with God. that changed me forever. And it has a lot to do with my story about who I am, about what drives me, what makes me tick. And in particular, you know, a lot of people have asked me how I had the courage to go up against the FBI's leadership, against Hillary Clinton and her associates and Russian intelligence agents in my whistleblowing case.
Yeah, most people.
And I have to say, it was God, and it was 100% my faith in God that got me through that and gave me the courage to do that.
And courage you have. Most people end up dead when they try to go up against the Clintons, or at least have ended up dead going up against the Clintons. So I'm glad that you had the courage to do that. And, sir, thank you for the courage also to publicly state your love for Jesus Christ. I mean, if more people understood, imagine, I've asked this before, guys, imagine if we had a Congress that was full of people who just, even if they didn't go to church on Sundays, but understood that the fear of God is what keeps us straight.
That's right. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite verses in the Proverbs is, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of all wisdom. And I've thought about that a lot. I look at what goes on in our country right now, and particularly in Congress, and I have to wonder, how many of these people actually fear God, and not just in the federal government, but in the state legislatures. I look at see what's happening in our country, and it's disgraceful. It's also, it's very troubling when you see, today there seems to be a blatant disregard for truth and a blatant disregard, and not just disregard, but there's a very strong antichrist spirit in this country.
Yes.
And a lot of that, quite frankly, is in government. It's in the media. It's in our universities. And I hate to say this, but even in some of our churches, it's very sad.
Mm-hmm.
But we're in a really bad place as a country, and I believe that we are looking at what we're seeing right now with this just complete, almost like Satan has ripped off his mask and he's parading around, with a lot of these ideas and this push to try to normalize pedophilia, the transgender social contagion that has pushed itself out there, just rampant out of control spending that's going on, and which is really it's theft. When the government takes from people and then spends it without even consulting the very people that they're supposed to be representing.
Well, they regard it as their money.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. You hear them actually speak of it that way, which is just unbelievable. But
yeah, it is. But that's going to require us to come together, work together, work diligently to hold these people accountable. One of the things we advertise in this show is the elimination of the personal income tax that they have on us. I mean, that is a form of slavery, and we advocate for those. We bring people on the show and we ask them to justify where they stand. If they're from an opposing view, I'll ask them, how can you tell me that it's okay to sit here and see what our government's doing, especially a government without consequences? Those of us that have traveled the world with the military or have just traveled the world have seen how some of these other countries work. When we say that the United States is truly the freest country in the world, that's not an exaggeration or what's that word, hyperbole. It's a fact. It's not an illusion. And that's, I think, what they're trying to change. So we need more people like you.
Yeah, and I would say that our country is the freest nation on earth when it comes to how it is on paper. But the reality is that things have changed. You have people who are not honoring the Constitution, who are not keeping their oath, and that, in fact, if anything, they're working against it. They're enemies, of the Constitution. When I took that oath, when you took that oath, that oath was to uphold and support the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And the fact is there are domestic enemies right now at the helm of our country.
That's right.
Yeah, I think he tripped on the stage the other day because, the weight of his disloyalty to America, I don't think he was able to hold it there anymore.
That's a very astute observation.
Tell me about your time in the Army. I mean, I'll tell you, I did 13 years almost, and the only reason why I had to step out was because of my ex-wife did some crazy stuff, and I ended up a single dad overnight, and the general that I was working for and I had a conversation, and we both kind of agreed that family needed to be the priority, and that's kind of the path that I took. But I'll tell you, I miss wearing the uniform on a daily basis. But I took an oath, and that is why I do what I do, why I spend the money the way I spend the money, and why I hold accountable those that I hold accountable. But what was your experiences in the military? Like, where were you stationed? What did you see? And just so you understand, Nate, and our listeners, I want our listeners to know who Nate is, right? Who you are personally, so that when we start talking about your whistleblowing, what you did, and what you're doing now, people can understand, instead of putting you off as some Trumpite, as they like to call him in New York State, or, you know, some conservative. New York State's a tough state. So is West Virginia, though. So, you know, that's why I think it's so important for people to understand who it is that we're talking to, fundamentally. That's why we give an entire hour to the show. So what was your experiences in the Army?
Well, I joined the United States Army back in 1997. I was up to my eyeballs in debt due to university, going to school to get my degree in telecommunications management. I actually dropped out of college because I was getting, I was getting an education, but at the same time, I was gaining debt way too quickly. I had one child, one on the way, and they had an Army loan repayment program, so I joined the military and ended up going through school. And it was actually the Army that gave me my trade. Back then, it was called information assurance. It's called cybersecurity. But I really got in on that career field right at the very beginning of its inception. And it was, of course, a really good move. It was not easy. I think the first 2 years I was in the Army, I saw my wife and children for 4 months. I spent the majority of my career in the military. I ended up going to school, and then I ended up going went to the basic, and then I went to AIT, which was a long AIT. But we had a mixed unit, and we weren't allowed to. Those of us that were there for like 10 months in my schooling, it wasn't. But the last couple of months that I was able to move off base and live with my wife and children, but. They sent me immediately after I finished my school. They sent me on a company tour to Korea. And so I spent a year away from my family. And it was a very difficult time. It was not without its challenges. Had I to do it all over again, I think I would still do it. But, you know, it obviously going into it, not really having a background of knowing, you know, what I was getting into, it was definitely challenging. It challenged my faith. It challenged my morals. I ended up... struggling with alcoholism and some other issues that came about, I think, from those prolonged periods. But God ultimately, got me through it. I had some backsliding and the Lord pulled me back to himself. But I came out of it a much more stronger person and much more assured of who I am. And I think it was a good thing for me. The biggest thing, though, is it showed me that I had a great... I had an ability to learn, technology, and I was good at it. I was good at troubleshooting, good at engineering. And so I ended up getting out of the Army after 3.5 years, and they had a drawdown, and I ended up getting out. I got picked up right away as a contractor for Defense Information Systems Agency, DISA. And that was a great career. And then eventually I was hired by the United States Navy as a civil servant. And it was at that time I took the oath for the second time. And I ended up taking an oath as a civil servant. And then I ended up going to Japan with my family, and then to Hawaii, and then to Washington, D.C. area when I took a job as a civil servant with the Marine Corps. And I was hired by MAR-4 Cyber, Marine Forces Cyber Command. There I was trained on some of the best and the most advanced techniques in cyber warfare and cyber defense through NSA's school. We were detached to NSA as part of the national mission. I was, even though I was a civilian, I was embedded with a bunch of Marines and was doing my training with them and deploying with them. It was really... probably one of the most exciting jobs that I've ever had. I really enjoyed it. But while I was there, I got offered twice my salary, which is really hard to turn down, especially a man with four children. But I got offered twice my salary to go work for the FBI as a contractor. And I had very specialized skills, particularly in enterprise-wide deployment of that particular vulnerability management system. And so I architected and designed and began deployment. That's what I was hired for at the FBI, of this vulnerability management system. And of course, while I was there, that's when I came across information that I ultimately ended up having to look into, and discovered that there was a plot at the FBI to cover up the crimes committed by Hillary Clinton and committed by her associates in relationship to a major pay-to-play scheme, and that involved money laundering, securities and exchange fraud, terrorism financing, and public corruption.
Wow. So you found this information. You decided that you needed to do something. What happened next?
Well, you know, at first when I found it, I had heard a rumor which caused me to look into it. And somebody had seen some transcripts of a system that was used for communicating within the FBI on a secret network. And the FBI has some of the best records management in the world. Because of things that have happened in the past, they've been required to develop things that will transcribe conversations and things like that. So somebody had seen these transcripts of senior-level people, we call the seventh floor, communicating about what they were going to do about all this information that they discovered, and words were flying around like treason, and this is so big it can bring down the government. And their decision, they were afraid that Hillary Clinton was going to get elected, because that's what everybody was saying. And so they decided that they didn't want her coming after them, so they decided to cover it all up. And when I heard this, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, and so I went and I looked. I had access to the secret network. I went and looked for these transcripts. I never did find those transcripts. However, I did find all the evidence that they were referring to, and the evidence was overwhelming. There was, you know, over 300 pages of, you know, financial documents that the FBI was reviewing, largely consisting of U.S. Treasury suspicious activity reports that had been submitted to the FBI through FinCEN. And they had analyst notes which indicated a high probability of criminal activity in the categories that I mentioned earlier. What I was mainly looking at, though, when I saw these things, was that there was, you know, these all had field offices that they were being investigated out of. They had case numbers assigned to them. They had it was the New York field office. It was the Washington field office and the Little Rock, Arkansas field office. And so these documents, by the way, are what are referenced in the Durham report that just came out on page 78. And so anybody that wants to go look at that, they can go to the Durham report, look on page 78. And that first paragraph, it's talking about the documents that I turned over. Now, there's also mention of an intelligence report, and there was an intelligence report that that basically showed that the FBI knew that a company, a Russian energy company called Rosatom, was attempting to infiltrate the U.S. uranium supply chain. They knew this before the sale of Uranium 1 to Rosatom, which had to be approved through the CFIUS committee, which is a committee that has a responsibility to ensure that national security issues are being reviewed. And this was a national security issue because Uranium 1 processed 20% of the United States uranium supply. So that had to get approved, and it got approved, even though the FBI knew these things and knew about this. And not just the FBI, by the way. I had documents that I carried out of the FBI and brought to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and the IG, that also showed that both Obama and Biden also knew these things because they were being briefed about them in the presidential daily brief. So it's a very long story to get into, so I'm giving you a short abridged version of it.
But, no, that's good.
Basically, I made two disclosures. First, originally to a senior member or one of the senior staffers to Devin Nunes, who was chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. He asked me to go back in and get, and I brought out the originally the financial documents, which were all classified secret. And I had a courier card, so I was authorized to do this. And then also as a whistleblower, I was authorized to do this. And I brought them to the senior staffer.
Nate, you didn't break any laws in recovering that information, correct?
No, I did not break any laws. That's why I still hold my top secret clearance today. And I was never charged with a crime.
We're speaking with Nate Kane. He is running for Congress in the West Virginia 2nd Congressional District here on the Next Step Show on WYSL. Nate, the day came when you decided that you had to do something about this. You had this knowledge. It was obviously burdensome to you and distressing. And you felt, I'm sure, disloyal because if you didn't bring it to somebody's attention. Tell us what that first step was, what that was like, the day that light came on, and you said, this has to be stopped, and I have to bring this to someone's attention. What happened?
Sure. Well, the first thing is when I looked into these things, I saw case files, so I thought, well, it was just rumors. It wasn't true. They were going to indict Hillary Clinton. This was what I believed. But when Comey came out and he went and did a press conference in front of the J. Edgar Hoover building, that was the first time that the lights kind of turned on and I realized, oh, wow, they are going to cover this up. And if you'll remember, Comey came out and basically laid out a litany of crimes that essentially Hillary Clinton had committed related to the Espionage Act. These were, all of these classified documents were found on this personal computer of hers, email server. And one of the things in particular that caught my attention was there were 7 email chains that included SAPs. These are special access programs. For those that don't understand what that means, these are documents that are classified above top secret. They have special categorization and compartmentalization. You cannot, even if you have a top secret clearance, you don't get to look at these things unless you're read on to the program, and you have to have a need to know, and then you also have to be given authorization to look at them. Yet these email chains with this information was found on her personal email server. It was never explained in all the things that he said about how those things got out of a SCIF, which is it's a secret compartmentalized information facility. You would have to jump through all kinds of hoops to get this stuff out of there. I've worked in those for the majority of my career, and I knew exactly what he was saying when he mentioned this. And when he said then, after saying all of this, he said, no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case against Hillary Clinton for this thing. I knew at that point in time there was no way what he was saying was true, and that he was indicating right there that they fully intended to cover up these crimes. Because I had information on where they had already had evidence, and yet this was something new they were looking into, the email server. And now he's coming out and publicly, trying to gaslight everybody to say, right, that there were no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case, which is just not true. If you'll remember, right before that, there was a case in where a Navy submarine, submariner had taken a picture of the bunk where they sleep in. And, there was nothing really classified about it other than that the submarine in and of itself is classified. And they threw that guy in jail. And so Hillary Clinton was bringing out, top secret, SCI, special access program documents found on her server, which, by the way, he also added in that meeting that there were, the likelihood of them being hacked, that they had evidence that China had accessed that server and that other countries had accessed that server. There was nothing there that was normal, and none of that should have been ignored. So that was when I knew.
That's even worse than what we know, right? Like,
that's right.
Top secret, above top secret. You know what I mean? Like, general public, you're like, okay, these are this is treason. But now hearing it, right? Like, that this is even a step above that. And how this woman is walking around free, outside of the fact, again, most people end up dead, is just unbelievable to me.
Well, the
more so than it was even just 5 minutes ago. I just have to tell you that.
Yeah. Well, I ended up going home that night, and I was laying in bed next to my wife and looking up at the ceiling, and she could tell something was wrong. And she asked me, what's going on? And it was at that moment I told her, I said, I think I'm going to have to blow the whistle on the FBI. And her initial response to me was, why does it have to be you? You know, why can't somebody else do this?
That's a wifely response.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, because she realized, she's like, do you realize this is going to change our lives? You know, this is going to change everything. This is going to permanently alter, you know, our lives. And I told her, I said, look, I think God put me in this position to be there. And I said, I can't ignore this. Mm. I swore an oath, and I have to do something about it. And if not me, then who else is going to do it? Because obviously, I'm not the only person that saw these documents, but as far as I knew, I was the only person who was willing to do something about it. And so I told her that, and then she said, well, if you feel God is calling you to do this, then you got to do it. And so she backed me and supported me, and there's no way I could have done it without, you know, I think without her
support.
But it turned out that we went through this long, arduous process of blowing the whistle. Like I said, it included two separate disclosures. The first one, you know, directly to a House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence senior staffer. And then he asked me to go back in and find an intelligence report. I went back in, found that intelligence report, brought that out along with all the other documents on a thumb drive the second time. And when I tried to communicate with them to, you know, to make contact, I lost contact. I got no response. So then I ended up having to formally go through a process with a lawyer and get protection under the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act. Hmm. And there were a couple of miraculous things that happened in there that that I think, you know, are important, you know, for people to understand. One was when I met this lawyer, I had my first meeting with him. You know, he told me I was in a pretty bad situation. And you know, he basically asked me, he says, you know, after we talked, he says, are you independently wealthy? And I said, no. And he said, do you have any rich relatives? And I said, no. And then he said, because I'm expenses. And I said, well, how much? And he said, $750 an hour. And I thought to myself, well, I can't afford that.
Yeah.
So I ended up, you know, I ended up going, and he said that he couldn't take my case pro bono because of the liability. And so I ended up going home that night. Honestly, I wept with my wife, and we got on our knees and prayed, and then went to bed. I woke up multiple times throughout the night, I think just full of anxiety. And every time I got up, I got on my knees and prayed. And 2 days later, my lawyer called me, and he said, a funny thing happened. I went down and met with a woman in Nashville who had done some work for pro bono before, and she was a woman of means. And he went down to go talk to her and ask her if she would be willing to donate, like, say, $10,000 towards a legal fund. And she asked him how much this was likely going to cost me. And he said probably a couple $100,000. And so she pulled out her checkbook and wrote a check for $200,000.
Wow.
That covered my entire legal fund.
That's
my
amazing.
Legal fees in total with, I think, several different lawyers ended up costing about, I think it was $198,000.
That's amazing.
So God provided right off the bat. That was miracle number one. The second miracle that happened was about a week later, he wanted us to go see a defense attorney. And you had Joe DeGeneva and Victoria Tausing. And Victoria Tausing was representing the other Uranium One whistleblower, the guy who was an FBI informant who was providing information to the FBI and then got cut off. And so she was representing him. She was a defense attorney, so we went to go see them. And on our way there, when we stopped, before we went into their home, I was so full of anxiety. I didn't know if I was going to end up dead, you know, or in jail, or both. And I was extremely stressed out. And I asked Michael, I said, can we pray? And I didn't know if he was a particularly religious man or anything, but I couldn't help myself but ask. And he said, absolutely. And he grabbed me by the hand, and we prayed. Now, go back, you know, 10 years before that, my wife and I were at a church in Southern California, Palm Canyon Christian Center, and we were doing this exercise and learning to hear God. And we were supposed to pray and fast and then with a notepad and pen, just sit quietly and listen for that still small voice and
yes.
write down what we hear.
Yes, Lord.
Well, the only thing that I heard was go to Sakaris. So this was back before the smartphones. So I ended up going on my computer and to MapQuest. That's how long ago it was. This was 15 years from now, 10 years from that point.
Ancient.
And I looked for Sakaris everywhere. I could not find a place named Sakaris anywhere. Now, my wife, she was a Spanish major, so she remembered this story. And because she told me, she said, well, maybe you heard God wrong. Maybe what you heard was socorro, which is in Spanish means help. And I said, no, I know what I heard. I heard Sicarus. And so I ended up forgetting about it because, you know, I thought maybe I heard wrong or something like that. So now back, you know, back to me sitting in the car with my lawyer, and he's praying for me. And as soon as he said amen, all of a sudden I realized, I remembered that memory, and I realized my lawyer's last name was Sicarus. His name was Michael Sicarus.
Oh, my gosh.
Right at that moment, I knew that for the last 10 years, God had been directing my steps and had led me to the place where I was working at the FBI, and I had no more fear at that point because I knew I was right where God wanted me to be. And that, I think, you know, was one of the main reasons why, you know, I had no fear after this and was able to continue, you know, along with this process of getting this information out and then, you know, being vocal about it and coming out about it.
Yeah, it is. Hey, we got to go to break here in a quick second, but I've said over and over on this show, no one can convince me that God isn't alive and doesn't exist. I've seen it. Nate just seen it. It's there. And also, just to point out one of the things that Nate had shared, the FBI offices where these investigations are taking place were New York, Arkansas, and D.C., which happens to be three major areas that the Clintons have a significant amount of influence and control. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Next Step Show on the WYSL stations. We'll be right back.
If you're looking to market and grow your business, make new business connections, and give back to the community in a meaningful way, consider joining the Greece Regional Chamber of Commerce. We're the largest suburban chamber in Monroe County, and we offer networking, education, marketing, insurance, and advocacy. You do not need to live or work in Greece to join. Our members come from throughout the region. In short, we're better together, and together, we're moving business forward. Visit GreeceChamber.org or call 585-227-7272 to join today.
Youth for Christ Rochester, a youth development organization in downtown, is dedicated to changing city kids' lives through life and relational leadership coaching and finding their purpose and destiny in Christ. Now, in addition to our Friday night basketball and P31 Girls, the Fatherhood Initiative, summer camp, we've added YFC Arts Academy. To get connected or find out more, check out our Facebook page at Youth for Christ Rochester or go to yfcrochester.org/donate.
Hi, this is attorney Christine Demo Vasquez. For more than 18 years, I've provided quality legal services tailored to the unique needs of each of my clients. I take the time to educate my clients about the law, explain the legal process, listen carefully, answer questions, and keep my clients informed throughout the process.
An attorney who understands the complexities of the family court system. Call attorney Christine Demo Vasquez at 585-427-0675. 585-427-0675.
The fair tax replaces the income tax and abolishes the IRS for good. But that's not going to happen if the current crop of politicians have their way. Fair Tax New York is looking for motivated citizens who are willing to contact candidates and get them to sign the Fair Tax Pledge, promising to push for fair tax if elected. Call Fair Tax New York at 585-944-0588. That's 585-944-0588. Make that call today.
Peter Vasquez and Aisha Kreutz, The Next Step Show on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to The Next Step Show with Peter Vasquez and Aisha Kreutz. You know, we left...
That would be Peter Vasquez, that conservative New Yorker.
Oh, the conservative New... Or Rican.
And I think it'd be Aisha Kreutz, the mayor of Realville.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Rush.
But we can't forget the voice of liberty either. The man himself.
Roberto Savaje.
Roberto Savaje.
That's right. And, you know, and we can't forget when we left, you know, we were talking to Nate Kane, who's running for U.S. Congress, West Virginia, whistleblower. And there are a couple things that he said that I just wanted to, you know, that you hear it from. I think you hear it from us probably way too often. But if not me, then who, right? Like, God will say that a lot to us, right? If not you, then who? There, we have such a grand ability and our delusions of grandeur somehow, right? Like we have delusions of grandeur about being great, but then we always want to push that greatness off to somebody else and saying, oh, well, somebody else is going to do it. But God is always calling you and saying, you know, I put you in a place for such a time as this, and it is up to us to answer the call, right? The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. And this is such a great story to illustrate that, right? All he had to do was just, you know, we know, right? He's like, my business is going to fail. This is going to happen. You know, I'm going to lose everything. How am I going to do this? But you just took that. He just took that next step and said, because I know.
And he put it in God's hands.
And you put it in God's hand. And being able to hear it, right? We've been talking a lot about spiritual warfare on this show, right? And the spiritual warfare that we've been in, talking about actually free soup is very apropos for this particular one as well. But guys, hearing the voice of God, mm-hmm. right? That is part of spiritual warfare. He was able to then, because he answered the question that I had. I'm going to get back right to him right now. But I was going to ask him, how did you just not having fear? But he answered that for us, right? Because he could hear the voice of God, because the spiritual warfare was there, because your relationship with Christ is solid. That when he calls you to do things that seem impossible, where you're going to lose your life, this was a life-threatening situation for those of you who know the Clintons and the 70 names that are linked to them.
And the states that they right? run in and the crazy things that they've done.
Right. So, Nate, you know, let's...
Let's bring him back on. I mean, he is sitting patiently. Ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Nate Kane, sir, thank you for hanging in there. I appreciate the time that you're taking with us. I appreciate your love for Jesus Christ. I appreciate the courage that you're displayed and are displaying and continue to display. For the next few minutes, I thought maybe we can talk a little bit about election integrity and the cybersecurity threat and the yes. call from President Trump to assist to assist with this investigation. Now, Nate, before you go, last week and also back in November 4th, on this show we had an organization called AuditNY.com, who's uncovered a significant, and I'm talking in the amount of millions, inconsistencies within the voter rolls here. And last week we talked about some of the cybersecurity issues, and they were actually mentioned in the Journal of Information. Do you guys remember the name of the full journal that Marley...
Not securities.
It's information. I don't.
I'm yeah. drawing a blank.
But they had a catastrophe.
Yeah, they were mentioned. They were peer reviewed to show that the voter rolls here in New York State, the NICE system that they use, is completely broken.
Yeah.
So can we? Nick,
I think it's on the site there. Visit NY.
Yeah. NY. It's auditny.com. Nate, if you want to take that down, take a look at it.
Right. Or is it org?
No, it's .com.
.com. But it's Citizens. Yeah. It's New York Citizens Audit is the group.
Maybe Nate's familiar with it. Have you heard of it, Nate?
I have, yes. And in fact, they've done some really good work. One of the things that so how I ended up getting involved in election integrity work was, you know, to kind of round off with my whistleblowing thing, I ultimately ended up going through that second disclosure. I got protection. I ended up given a code name and was able to get my information to
That's
both
so
committees.
Cool.
But the FBI raided my home 4 months
That's
later
not cool.
and really put us through the ringer. And eventually, and they made the mistake of leaking that to the press. And so it all came out, and I ended up, you know, being forced to really go public about everything. And so several months later, or maybe it was a couple of years later, right after the 2020 election, you know, my name... you know, I had already passed the sniff test with the Trump administration, you know, somebody willing to do the right thing and go up against Hillary. And so they, my lawyer contacted me, my whistleblowing attorney. I hadn't heard from him for a while, and he calls me up out of the blue and says, hey, the White House is going to call you in the next hour here, so make sure you answer the phone. And, you know, but they're going to ask you if you'll be willing to, you know, come down and talk to them about some election integrity stuff. And he had asked me about a couple weeks before that to look into some things related to cybersecurity audits for election integrity, and I had a background in cybersecurity audits and cyber forensics because of my cybersecurity background. So I had written up something that he had taken and kind of put in his legal legalese terms and had given to this group within the White House. Next thing I know, I'm coming down to meet at Steve Bannon's office, and it was there. I was put on a team to provide information to Peter Navarro and his team. And so I had there were some people who were his senior staff members of the White House that were ending up communicating with us on a daily basis, and we were providing our information to them. And so I was on a team of two other guys. And one of those guys is I've become really, really good friends with. And I mean, as you can imagine, we were there for about 2-3 months living out of a hotel. And I took a leave of absence without pay and dedicated my time to looking into this stuff. But we discovered a lot of things. And we provided that information, to these White House staffers that were, been feeding it up the chain. But ultimately, I think this information ended up in Peter Navarro's report, and then some of that information also ended up in other places as well. And we were happy to help. Ultimately, I think I was in, 6 or 7 different lawsuits as an expert witness, including the one that went to the Supreme Court. But the problem with all those lawsuits was that not a single one of the judges in any of those cases was willing to even allow for evidentiary hearing, which was a big problem because if they weren't even willing to look at the evidence, then the claims that people make that it was all bogus, is completely false because yeah. The fact is the courts were not willing to look at it. And I think the reason was they did not want another hanging Chad moment. They did not want another contested election. They weren't willing to put their necks on. They basically said, forget about the oath that they took as judges, and I'll call them out. They flat out refused to honor their oath to the Constitution. And so that I really see is the big problem. So it was the very first time in my life that I ever saw corruption within the judiciary, and that really was very disconcerting and, quite frankly, depressing. I came home from that whole experience feeling totally defeated and depressed, and I remember praying and asking God, what the heck? Because we saw evidence. In fact, the story of the truck driver that went from Bethpage, New York, into Pennsylvania with the ballots in the truck, mm-hmm. That story was 100% accurate. I actually brought in a couple of investigators to assist with that who were very effective in being able to get witness testimony from somebody working in the parcel sorting center at the U.S. Post Office there, and who confirmed the ballots were being moved onto the truck. And he investigated it all the way into finding out that there was a company that was counterfeiting these ballots. A full-blown investigation was being opened up with the FBI, with John Durham Jr., with the who was the Eastern District of New York U.S. Attorney, I think, at the time. Bill Barr was in on those conversations. I was listening in on those conversations because I was assisting and providing assistance with the Amistad Project that was looking into investigations. And what we found out was that and the U.S. Post Office Postmaster General, they have their own investigative team. They were also being involved in this. All of that was going down, and then for some reason, it all fell apart, and then everything got shut down. And I still don't know the whole reasons behind that. But when Bill Barr went before Congress and he said he saw no evidence of widespread election fraud, that was a flat out lie, total lie. And, as far as I'm concerned, he perjured himself. And so there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on. I think people were afraid. I think they were afraid of the system. They were afraid of, the intelligence community. They were afraid of the deep state. And they knew that if they stood up against it, then they were going to come after them and come after their family and come after, and I really do think that it was a lot of it was fear-based. And it was unfortunate, but there was not justice done in that election fraud. And there was a lot of election fraud that occurred.
So, Nate,
and it happened in many different ways.
Nate, real quick, you know, and you said something that I think a lot of people are feeling today about feeling defeated, that there's, you know, a lot of gloom, no hope, what's the point? All, you know what I mean? Like, what do you do when you see all of this corruption in the FBI, the judiciary, right, that we can see with our own eyes, and yet your own government is gaslighting you, and what is the recourse? Why bother, right? But you don't seem, right, sure. Like, and, you know, I know, you know, Peter and our solution, right, is like more people like you getting in office. But I'm just saying, like, with you being in the thick of it, even so much more so than maybe the general public to see that, how do you, right, next steps, how do you keep yourself saying, you know what, I'm just going to go hide away and do my own thing because nobody cares anyway. So why even bother? Because, look, we all know this is happening and nobody's doing anything because everybody's just afraid to say anything against the system and it's too big, David and Goliath type of thing.
No, you're right. That what you're talking about, you're describing, is this new ideology or practice called being blackpilled, right? You know, where people have basically given up hope. They decide to, you know, basically, you know, just give up and not continue the fight and try to make whatever life they can for themselves in this bad situation. And that certainly is one option that people have. When I have those types of experiences, I take it to God. And I went and I prayed. I said, God, what is going on here? Why would you call me down here to be involved in all this for nothing good to come of it?
Come on.
And I was upset. And I basically questioned God about it. And what I heard was, the answer to your question will be found in Amos chapter 5. So I went and I looked it up. And I read Amos chapter 5. And what you see all throughout Amos chapter 5 is basically God's judgment coming on Israel because of injustice in the courts. And that was really interesting to me because I'd never seen that before. And I look at this, and the whole thing is one thing after another. God's judgment coming on the people because of injustice in the courts, where those who tell the truth are called liars, and those that lie are put up in a high position. About those that don't get a fair they don't get a fair shake in the courts. That they don't get, those that are poor not giving, being given, proper
that's
counsel,
right,
and things like that. It's just one thing after another, and that's what you see today in our justice system. Is you see a two-tiered system of justice. You see, you don't see equal justice under the law. You see injustice, and so when we're experiencing that thing, what's clear in reading this, this passage, is that God does not like that, that God despises that, that he finds it as an abomination. And so we are being judged right now, I believe. Our country is under a form of judgment because of injustice in our courts. And so when I was reading through this, there is an answer. And what it says, about halfway through the passage, after it's kind of gone through all these judgments about the injustices in the courts, it says, love what is good and hate what is evil, and try to and maintain or seek to maintain justice in the courts. And it says, perhaps God will relent from his judgment. It doesn't guarantee it, but it says a perhaps. And I'll take a perhaps any day over a definitely not. You know, that I don't want to see our country completely fall. And the only way that we can, from what I gathered from this passage, the only way that we can attempt to try to correct things in our country is we've got to fix the situation in our justice system.
Yes.
And so that is one of my main goals in my campaign, and one of the things I'm running on is this idea of creating something called an Article I tribunal. But before I get into that, one thing I want to mention is I would never run for office if I didn't feel God calling me to do this, because there's too much risk, there's too much temptation, there's the evil is so prevalent in Washington, D.C. I really don't want to expose myself or my family to that. My family went through hell when I got raided.
It's like going into the Satanic Temple.
It is, and it's really like putting my whole family and myself out there to be attacked, because we can live our private life. And by the way, you know, God restored everything we lost. I mean, I lost my job, I lost, you know, my anonymity, I lost everything. You know, I had twice I got poisoned. I had the FBI coming after me, hanging a indictment over my head for 5 years until finally, you know, the statute of limitations ran out and they gave me my stuff back. They didn't tell me, oh yeah, we're done investing you. I got spied on, I'm pretty certain, with a 702 FISA warrant for 2 years after it came out that I was a whistleblower. Oh, I went through hell. I did not want to go through that again. But I've also learned that when God tells you to do something, you don't say no.
No,
but you can negotiate.
And when you're service people, right, you never give up. Right, you hear
that
all the time from people. It's always taking the next step forward, and we're talking even about like the courts, justice system. Of course, here in Monroe County, we have Christine Demo Vasquez running for family court. Talk about having people of integrity on our court system to change things, to make sure that we have these godly people that are going to go and follow their hearts. It's just amazing to me.
So Nate, we've got about 2 minutes left, and I really want to make sure, because you had mentioned on your race, and I wanted to make sure we gave a little time to that. So you had mentioned, which was something I wanted to ask you about, was the violation of our rights and Article I tribunal. This is something that you had listed in the bio that you had given me. Tell us about that tribunal. I'm curious. In about two minutes.
So under the Constitution, under Article I, Section 8, the Congress has the right to appoint what's called a Article I tribunal, which is a court. We already have them in existence. The U.S. Tax Court is an example of that. But these appointments are not permanent. They're not, it's not like an Article III court. But essentially, they are a court where the appointments and the choice of judges are made by the Congress. It requires a simple majority in both houses in order to create this court. But the purpose of it is to address agency issues. And I think actually our founders, what their intent was for exactly a situation like this, where you have corrupted courts and you need, and particularly the Justice Department is corrupt. And so you can't get, the FBI is never going to investigate themselves. The DOJ is never going to indict themselves. And so what I am saying that we need is a special court that will essentially do that work, that will investigate and indict and judge the Justice Department, the FBI, the intelligence community for violations of our constitutional rights, in particular, deprivation of rights under color of law, which carries a maximum sentence of life in prison, and the death penalty if somebody lost their life in the commission of them being deprived their rights. It can be levied against federal, state, and local officials, as well as, and it even says this in the law, it can be levied against healthcare providers, which is important, because after what happened with COVID, I think there's some investigation that needs to be happening on that matter. And as we find out that more and more that these people knew what was going on, and they put people's lives at risk, I think there needs to be some consequences.
And that is an accountability tool that can be used. Nate, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I truly appreciate your time. Real quick, how can somebody learn more about you if they want to follow up?
They can go to my website, my campaign site, which is natecainforwv.com. That's NATECAIN, the number 4, WV.com. And that also, NateCainForWV, is my handle for all social media. I mean, literally, if there's social media out there, I'm probably on it with the @NateCainForWV. There's also a link on there where people can see all my interviews and media, as well as there's a link for folks to donate to my campaign, which is something I definitely do need help with.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Nate. Hey, Bob, I think it's time for...
Now, Free Soup with Aisha Kreutz.
Yeah, don't forget to donate to Nate Gaines' campaign. So, folks, the Belt of Truth is the first piece of armor that God talks about in Ephesians 6:10 through 17. Isn't it interesting how truth is listed first? I would have thought God would have chosen salvation or righteousness or law, but without truth, none of these things are really possible. The belt of truth is the first part of the armor listed because without truth, we are lost, and the schemes of the devil will surely overpower us. Scripture says the gospel is truth. If you cannot put on the belt of truth, all else will be a foundation of lies.
Be a leader. Share with us. Advertise with us. NextStepShow.com. Que tengan una semana bendecida. We appreciate you. Until next week.